Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to Breaking the Silence in the most beautiful, and I mean this, the most beautiful city in the world, Houston, Texas. You can see it right behind me. I'm looking kind of sadly over at the NRG Stadium, which is just right across the street here, thinking it's quiet there tonight. And here they are, Kansas City, playing that game tonight. I hope Kansas City gets beat, but I got a feeling it's going to be a tough game. I kind of cut it off while I go to get ready for the show. It's probably over by now, but I don't know. I just kind of like having a hometown feeling of victory. But hey, it doesn't happen every year, but we had a good season. Anyway, welcome to the program. It's great to have you here in my home, and we're going to have a great time tonight. We're going to be talking about some things that's really going to get up into your attic and hopefully kick a couple shingles loose to make you think differently than what you've ever thought before. And I think that's what, at least in my point of view, is what my whole life has been about. But the only thing that I can do in life halfway decent is talk. The rest of it is kind of in vain, but I like to talk in a way that we can break it down to simplicity. If you listen to, I've been in conferences the last two or three weeks, and you listen to all these other people and they talk and it kind of goes right over your head. But boy, they sound so brilliant, but I have no idea what they said. You couldn't give me a $100 bill to say, well, what he really said or what he meant to say was this. I tried to break it down to where somebody not so bright like me could understand it, because I'm not the smartest and the sharpest knife in the drawer, but I like to break it down to where I can use it. So I've always said since the day one that we've started this show 5 years ago, I've been 5.5 years now. I said that first night that if you give us 45 minutes to 55 minutes every Sunday night, we're going to give you a couple things, a couple tools, a couple bits or nuggets of wisdom that you can actually use tomorrow at the office, or next week with your kids, or tonight with you when you look in the mirror. So that's what it's all about, breaking the silence, letting everybody know what hurts, what doesn't hurt, how to fix those things that do hurt, and how to move on past what's happened to us. I'm kind of excited. I've been sitting in this chair right here for the last probably 72 hours typing and editing and laying out the latest book that will be coming out. It's called Hope, Embracing Your Scars, Learning How to Turn Life's Pain into Life's Power and Purpose. And just to try to figure out, I tried to hide everything that I was going through in my life for over 35 years plus. That's why my health is falling apart now, because your body is never intended to hold all of that toxicity, all of that past hurt and pain. But what I wanted to do, I masqueraded over it. How are you? I'm fine. And I just kept on going, tried to laugh and hem-haw around life. And in my second book, the second chapter of the book is called I'm Fine and Neither Are You, because that's what we sometimes say. I'm fine basically means I'm not so great, but I'm just going to move on to something different in the conversation. But I was just doing some laundry a while ago. And this ran through my mind a couple years ago, and it's in the book, just to let you know what you kind of expect on the way I think. Have you ever noticed that when you start doing laundry, you don't ever accept what anything's supposed to smell like? So automatically we put these beads in the water that's supposed to make it smell better. This one is lavender and vanilla bean, and it's supposed to calm you down. If you put these beads in your water and do your sheets, you're going to be calm that night, okay? Then on top of that, before you even put the sheets in, you put Tide in, and it has its own scent too. This one is smells like downy. Then in the rinse cycle, if this downy isn't enough, you do this. So you're putting smell on top of smell on top of smell. And if that's not good enough, where is it? When you throw the stuff in the dryer, you use Bounce, and it has an outdoor fresh. I wonder what anything would smell like if you just washed it in water and fragrance-free soap. Maybe it would smell actually natural. And you think, Greg, that's kind of goofy. But think about this too. You get in the shower, and I use Jack Black Turbo Wash. This smells like rosemary, eucalyptus, and juniper berry. Good night. There's three things there. Then, on top of that, you're washing your hair with something that smells like coconut from Dove or whatever. So you're coming out of there smelling like a coconut, rosemary, eucalyptus, and a juniper berry plant. And then you start spraying stuff like this that's scented on your body. And if you listen to every other commercial on TV right now, you have to use Lumi, because Lumi just covers up everything. You can use this on your pits, your butt crack, your privates, and your feet. You can use it all over your body, but this is supposed to make you smell nothing. There's no smell there. If that's not good enough, you got a little rough skin, you're going to end up throwing a little Bath and Body on you, and this is a cozy Sunday morning smell. Okay, so I have all of this fragrance, and then on the way out the door, you put on a little men's fufu. So you're covering up all of this stuff that you just washed in, that you just took a shower in, to cover it up with cologne. And then, God forbid, if you get your hands into something, you have to disinfect it with fresh rainfall scent. Why are we trying to cover up everything? Why in life do we spend most of our life and our energy on being something or smelling like or looking like or acting like or being like something that we really aren't? I wonder, could it be that we need to embrace who we are? Embrace those things that happened to me, that happened to you. I have a little sticky note right above my desk. I swear to goodness, right above my computer. I see it every day. I thank God for my past because it makes me who I am today. I don't want to cover it up anymore. That's a little glimpse of what this book's going to be about. Take all the smell out, all the masquerade out, all the pretending to be okay out, and say, folks, this is who I am. This is what happened to me. This is how I made it through it. This is how I fell. This is what my knees looked like when I fell. But I'll be doggone, I got right back up and got in the fight. And the fight is called the game of life. And you'll win if you keep pulling yourself up and facing it each and every day. The only time we lose, and I'm saying this because I made so many mistakes, any time that we say, hey, I'm not going to tell anybody, I'm going to keep this all to myself, and I'll make it through without anybody finding out who I really am. It starts eating you out from the inside out. And when it comes out, folks, it's not going to smell good. It's not going to look good. It's going to be embarrassing. And it'll be devastating to you mentally, physically, relationally, financially, sexually, every way possible. The entire Lee family will be affected until we finally embrace who we are, what's happened, and say, hey, I can make it. I can make it. That's kind of my intro. I still have other things that we can, you know, even in a room, we try to cover it up with this. And I have just all kinds of stuff, and that's not good enough. We have things that we stick into our electric cord to make the room smell better. And then we have this stuff. You go to the bathroom, it's called poopery. I have no idea what you do with this, but it's supposed to make all the bad stuff smell good. What are we doing to ourselves? And what are we doing? That's kind of the way I think. That's kind of the way I write. That's kind of the way I speak. But I want to tell you what, I can understand that. So tomorrow when you spray on stuff, tonight when you start doing this with your hair and this with your body and all the lathering and you're smelling everything, look in the mirror when you get out and go, wait, is that who I really am? Because I want to tell you what, I am ready to face the world with no mask on and being genuine and authentic. And there's going to be people waiting in line around the corner, around the block, around the building to meet somebody that's come to the office being absolutely real, genuine. We don't have that much in today's world. And when we see it, we throw it away. They must be fake. No, they're waiting. They're shouting. Where's the authenticity? Where's it at? It can start with you, and it'll change your entire world. If you want to get involved tonight, 888-627-6008. TJ, go ahead and bring on our beautiful guests tonight. I want the whole world to see their faces. Here they are. We got Landon Dickinson and Robert Bob Williams from the Ranch Hands Rescue and the Bob's House of Hope. Guys, welcome back by popular demand. We had so many people saying, hey, these guys were great. We didn't get enough of them because you're real. It's true. It's genuine. You're authentic. And thank you for being that way. Thank you for being my friends up there in Fort Worth, Dallas area, because I don't have too many real, true friendship. And I'm glad you guys are considered one of those in my hands that only has so many friends in my life. But thank you for being there. Welcome to the program tonight. How are y'all doing?
Kind, Greg. And it's an honor to be back with you. I have to tell you, after our first session together, I told Landon that I feel like I have known you my whole life. And from one survivor to another, it was an honor to do your show. And it's an honor to be back tonight. I have to tell you, what you said is so spot on, all right, with the new book that you're writing. You know, it took me 10 years to go to the Meadows, and once I got clean and sober, to talk about what happened to me, all right, and my rape and that sort of thing. And when I did, when I finally got the help that I needed, it was like somebody had lifted 10,000 pounds of pressure off of my shoulders. I didn't have to hide anymore. So I can't wait to read that. I was showing Landon that, you know, I just bought your latest book, and I'm excited to read it, so.
Bob, do you find that true, like when you said clean and sober, that you know somebody has a problem when somebody asks you, are you an alcoholic? Are you a drug addict? And no, I don't have no problem. I only take a drink or two a day. I mean, do you, when they don't realize or they don't admit, is that one of the biggest hurdles to figure out, hey, that person really does need help?
Oh, yeah. Denial is, you know, number one. And, you know, for me, I struggled for 12 years, right? And I was homeless by the time I was 20. And, you know, when I finally got clean and sober, you know, I relapsed after a year, and then I've been clean and sober since. As a matter of fact, I just had my 38th anniversary. So
wow,
I'm really
congrats.
Proud of that. But, you know, when you have to get up 25 times a night and see if you've locked the door when you are, have such fear that you're afraid to close your eyes and go to sleep. Because, when my attacker raped me, I was sound asleep. All right. And when you have to have a gun next to your bed, to protect yourself to go to sleep, it's not normal. And so I knew that I needed help. And I was diagnosed with PTSD and high anxiety in 1997. And so I went and got the help that I needed. But I think denial and people being afraid of what they're going to uncover or what might happen, not knowing what the outcome could be, is a lot of the reason that people are in denial. That plus the fact that, we use drugs and alcohol to mask pain. And so they've never dealt with it. They haven't hit it head on. And so that's a real challenge.
Landon, with the stuff that you guys are doing and the mission and the work that you're doing up there, not so much with the animals, because I want to talk about humans and the men and the boys that you're dealing with. What is it that your mission is and you want to accomplish with what you have and the resources you have? And tell me a little bit about why the importance of that right now is so needed in our society and in our world.
Absolutely. Happy to. And thank you for having us on again.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
It's a real honor, and it's always fun getting to see you and talk to you. And I love the analogy that you gave, because just on my own, from my own recovery, from my own stuff, right? We all have it. The turning point was when I internalized the message, "I'm worth being seen."
Yeah.
That something about that, just I am worth being seen, just as I am. That was a turning point. Because all of the prior experiences had taught me that I wasn't. And so, when it comes to the guys that we're serving, right? And Bob's House of Hope is the first safe house in the country for young men who've been sex trafficked. And we're talking complex PTSD with these guys, right? Most of these guys, it started in childhood, some as young as 1, 2 years old. I mean, and then continued throughout their lifespan until they came to us. So when they get to us, they may be 18 or 19 chronologically, but emotionally, developmentally, 12, 13, in some cases with those who are neurodivergent, you're talking 6 or 7. I mean, it is not, you are not dealing with an adult, even though they present as an adult. They are not yet there mentally and emotionally. Again, because trauma had happened during their youth and that stalls out development. And so they come to us with those deep-seated beliefs that I'm broken, I'm shattered, I'm unworthy, I'm unlovable, I'm not worth being seen. I'm, all those negative beliefs about themselves. And, a lot of people ask me about the trauma piece, right? And how do you help people recover from trauma? And what are the effects of trauma, et cetera? One of the things that I've learned from these guys and from other clients that I've worked with complex trauma, it's not really the physical abuse that was the thing that destroyed them. It was the abandonment, the betrayal, the attachment wound, the this person was supposed to take care of me and they hurt me, or this person was meant to be the one to show me love and the way in the world and they abandoned me and allowed this to happen to me. Those breaks in our early life, that's what destroys us. And that's part of what happened to me as well. It's not the same as these guys, but it cuts deep when those relationships are severed. So, I want to just kind of highlight what you said about friendship, and authenticity and being genuine. That's the key to recovery with these guys and just to living a good life is just to be genuine, authentic, be yourself, but also be yourself with kindness towards you and others, but show people. Not everybody's out there to hurt you. There are people that are trustworthy. There are people that are going to care about you and that are going to hold the line. They're going to stay stable and beside you through your journey, even as you make mistakes. And you're worth being seen, even when you make those mistakes. That to
Exactly.
me is the heart of recovery.
What's the difference in dealing with the different layers that men and boys go through compared to the layers that women and girls go through? Both of them are horrific. I understand
Without a
that.
doubt.
But there are a couple few different angles that we need to take with men and boys. What,
True.
Bob and Landon, are your perspectives of, hey, this is why we focus on this because we have that extra wisdom to be able to really crack that nut and get behind the masquerade and get to the real issues.
I'd like Bob to take that first as a survivor and as somebody who built this organization and founded this idea.
Okay, Bob.
So, I wanted to take all the things that I liked about rehab and counseling and all the different things. And I said, okay, I'm going to take all the good stuff and I'm going to apply it. And for example, when we first started doing mental health therapy with animals that have been abused and neglected, everybody said, look, you got to be a GALA certified and you got to do this and you got to do that. And we learned in these complex cases, because the safe house wasn't open yet, that we had to do different modalities, EMDR and so on and so forth. And so I said, well, let's just take the best practices of everything because we don't know what's going to work. All right. And apply it to these situations because they're extremely complex. When I look at myself, for example, the amount of shame and guilt, all right, from the things that I was forced to do. And even though I was turning my life around, I was, had a good job and was getting back in school and that sort of thing, I still had that shame and guilt. We've got to lift that shame and guilt. And it goes exactly to what you just said, right? About being able to be proud of who you are. But that takes time to be able to adjust your mind in a way that you feel valued and that it's okay if people don't accept you. Because what I always tell everybody with me, what you see is what you get. And I'm not going to change for everybody, for anybody. But at the end of the day, it's the judgment that these boys face and that other innocent victims face. And when I tell people that I'm an addict, all right, even though I tell them I'm clean and sober, when I tell them that I'm a survivor, even though I'm clean and sober, they look at you different. And so you've got to be able to handle that because it's not sympathy we want, all right? It's not, pity or anything like that. If our story can help one person, if it can shed some light on this problem that people are buying boys and young men, and that this is an epidemic in our country, then we'll be doing our job. And we can talk a little bit about the campaign that we're doing this week as we kind of get into, the clinical piece of this, which, when I worked with Landon, and I think I told you on our last segment, I'm really proud of what I built at Ranch Hands Rescue because we're going into our 16th year. But the Safe House Project has been something that we've built together. And I'm really proud of what we've accomplished and what we've built because this portion of Ranch Hands Rescue is very unique, still the only safe house in the country for young men that have been sex trafficked. And of course, we just announced our intentions to open for minors in 2025, 12 to 17 years old. But I guess the best way to explain this is that when you have years of trauma, the beatings, the fear, I always tell everybody it's a miracle that I don't have HIV because of the things that I was forced to do. And thank the good Lord, but I have no doubt that what happened to me then was God's way of preparing me for the work that I do today. But I hated God for many years. And so, trying to work through the complexity of the years of sexual abuse and of the trafficking component, along with the drug and alcohol addiction, that takes time. It doesn't happen overnight to peel back that onion, all right, and to start to attack this and take you back to when this happened. And when I went through all my intense counseling at the Meadows, my counselor would look at me and kindly remind me, you're not 17 anymore. All right? You're not there. And so I think that, today we've learned so much. But in my day, there wasn't programs. You didn't talk about it. You sweep it under the rug. Nobody understood it. And I just couldn't process it. And I often wonder, I admire your strength so much because you went on to achieve so many great things. And I never had that academic spirit. I think I was so beat into the ground that I just didn't believe in myself. And even as I started to turn 30 and 31 and started to have some sort of successes in my career, I still didn't believe it. It took me years. I was probably 40 before I
Did you
really started
self-sabotage?
to. Pardon?
Did you self-sabotage?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sure.
Besides shame and guilt,
Yeah.
you set yourself up for failure.
Yeah,
I did too.
absolutely. Because you don't believe in yourself, you know?
Yeah.
And you're afraid of it, you know? Yeah, no
Even
question.
in relationships?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Because even when it's
Yeah.
going good, you think they're lying to me. I don't trust them. They're doing this, they're doing this. And then, we end up backing away from everybody because the closer someone gets to me, I figure anybody's ever been close to me has screwed me over. Why would I
Yeah.
trust you?
No, you're absolutely right. And we build that wall and they
Yeah.
tell us how much they love us, and but we never really believe it. You know what I mean? And we never really think that that's ever going to happen to us. And that took a long time. That was a sad part of my life that, I regret to this day, but I didn't know how to handle it. And I think that, and the other thing for me was I wasn't having sex. I mean, I didn't want to participate in sex. That's not necessarily good in a relationship, right? But I didn't want anything to do with it because I felt so dirty. And so trying to work through that takes years.
And what is it, Landon, that does this up here that causes us to think and rewire what the natural tendencies, desires, urges ought to be in a man or a boy? And it kind of just pulls all the plugs and re-sticks things in different places. And it's so hard to get back to normalcy, is it not? If we ever get back to normalcy.
Right. No, absolutely. And it's a great question. And I think it gets at the heart of what a lot of people don't understand about the way men and boys present when they are trying to tell what happened. Because most of the time they just get labeled a bad kid or, a delinquent or criminal. Like they get those really negative, stigmatizing and harmful labels that make them retreat even further into the things you're asking about, which I think the easiest term for that is maladaptive coping. It's adaptive because it worked. And the reason I can say it worked is because they're alive in front of me today, right? So whatever they did in those horrible, awful, unimaginable situations technically worked as a survival mechanism. So even thoughts like self-harm, suicide, etc., those can be adaptive in those moments, right? They're not okay elsewhere, but in those traumatic moments, it may be the only thing that makes sense. It's the only adaptive approach that one can take. But that's when we call it maladaptive, because it's a problematic adaptive approach. So when you do that, you develop what we at the ranch call caltrails in your brain. It's basically neurons that wire together or that fire together, wire together. So the idea is whatever pathway you went down to solve a problem, if you keep going down that path, it creates a rut, and your brain goes back to that rut every time it sees something similar. So another way to think about it, especially since y'all brought up self-sabotage, which I spent many years thinking about self-sabotage because I've been down that path too, is it's basically a shield that you're trying to protect yourself with, but it's also the thing you're using to bash yourself in the face. So the very thing you're using to
That's
protect
good.
is also the thing that's causing you harm, right? So what you have to do in order to correct that with any human and really any mammal, it's with the animals too, is repetition. What we call an emotionally corrective experience, where we show somebody there's another way to do this, and then repeat that over and over and over. A really good example that I was given by one of my mentors and educators in this space is building a fence across an actual cow trail. If you build a fence across a cow trail, they will run into it and they will die. If you want to show them a new way to get to water so you can build a fence there, you have to take them down that other path repeatedly until they take that one, then you build the fence. Otherwise, they'll go down that same path, run into the fence, and die. And that's just such a poignant, natural example of what we're talking about here, where a maladaptive pathway is gets reinforced over and over and over, but you have to do repetition the other direction in order to overcome it and to develop adaptive coping skills.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's a perfect, let's take a break right now, because on the other side of this, Bob really wanted to go and have you, Landon, go into the depth of this mentality and what you're talking about right now. I want to talk more about these cow trails and how, when we end up going back to the wrong way, how do we shake that stuff off that we step into when we're on those cow trails back to the right way again. We'll be right back. 888-627-6008. I would love for somebody to call in tonight if you have a comment or a question or concern of saying, hey, how do I deal with this? I have a husband or I have a son that's battled this. You have the experts right here with the green screens behind them with their logos. Call in and pick their brain tonight. We would love to have you do it. We'll be right back after this very minute, 20-second commercial. Hang with us.
Get ready for a life-changing journey from the best-selling author of Shattered by the Darkness and When the Dark Clouds Come. Dr. Gregory Williams is back with his highly anticipated third book, Embracing Your Scars, learning how to turn life's pain into life's power and purpose. Have you ever wondered how to transform your struggles into strength? Do you want to stop hiding behind the pain, the heartache, and instead learn how to turn those scars into the very fuel that propels you towards greatness? If you do, then this book is for you. In Embracing Your Scars, Dr. Williams shows you how to take the negative experiences of your past and turn them into the very source of your future success. Don't miss out, because your transformation begins here. The book is available soon on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever great books are sold.
Welcome back. We're having all kinds of comments and people that's letting us know that they're enjoying the show. So thank you. Welcome back with Landon and Bob with Bob's House of Hope up in the Fort Worth, Dallas area. What's the actual city? Where? What's the actual location of Bob's House of Hope? Is it
It's Justin.
Justin?
Justin,
Texas.
Justin, Texas. Fantastic. As we was talking, Landon, you and Bob were mentioning something about, the cow trails and things of that order. Let's continue down that path. When you start experiencing these men and boys that come in, they have these issues, like we've all gone through, correctiveness, success, being in a new skin. How can we do that as painlessly? Or does sometimes it need to cause a little pain so we know what it feels like so we don't go back into the old habits?
That is a great question. Bob, do you mind if I start? Okay. So, again, that is a tough but really good question. And one of the things that I always say to the guys when they first come into the safe house and then continue to say throughout their time with us is what you are doing by being here and facing this stuff, it takes courage. It takes bravery. There is no courage without fear. So you're gonna be afraid. It's going to be scary. It's going to hurt sometimes, but that's the courage part that I'm talking about. You're not just facing this out of a sense of desperation and no other option. You're facing this. You chose our program because we help you work through it. It's not just a quick trauma treatment approach. It's a total recovery, reintegration in the community approach. That's how we do things. We base our system, our level system, on the developmental stages of childhood and adolescence. We have expert trauma therapists. We get them connected to medical care, dental care, legal assistance, education, vocation, spiritual, literally every domain of the human experience, because our goal, again, is total restoration. We want them to be able to face and work through what they've experienced, but also learn the life skills necessary to carry it forward. And what's been really amazing to me in the course of doing this work and working with these guys and spending time with them is almost every single one ends up choosing to go into some sort of helping field. They want to be a counselor, or they want to be a social worker, or they want to be, a dental hygienist. Like they want to help people in whatever way they can, which is just remarkable to me. It just, to me, that's the purest expression of the human spirit, that you can go through such horror and then use it and manipulate it and work on it and turn it into something powerful and effective and healing for other people. That's what makes it all worth it to me,
Yeah, that full
is the work
circle
that
is
it is.
wonderful. Do you ever find people that are in the challenge? And Bob, you mentioned that you was going through being sober for over 30 plus years, and congrats on that. Have you ever found people that are actually trying to get the help, and they get halfway through the toughness of that, and they decide this is too tough, and they turn around and go back? And they don't complete the program, they don't complete the recovery. When you want to say, hey, wait, when you're in the middle of hell, you might as well walk to the other side of it instead of turning around and going back to where you were. You're that close to safety, you're that close to recovery, it's the same distance. How do you re-encourage people when they have those relapses of going back to the cow trail? And now what? Now, how do we fix it?
All I work today, and then we did back then, when I was a kid. And I also tell them that we've assembled the best team of people, all right, in the country, that are trauma experts. And so if they meet me halfway, that I can help them. And I tell them that there's going to be a good day and a bad day. And we are going to teach you how to develop healthy boundaries. We're going to teach you how to develop friendships and love each other with healthy boundaries, all right? And we're going to help you through your trauma, and we're going to help you through your felonies, and all the rest of it, right? As Landon said, a comprehensive program. It's interesting. I ask myself all the time, and Landon and I have this conversation, what's the definition of success? Because the real answer to your question is we don't know. It does happen, okay? And psychologically, with the things that these kids have been through since some as early as 5 years old, all right? How do you, can we really fix that issue, all right? I think that if we can keep them from relapsing again, keep them from being re-trafficked, and integrate them into the world with some sort of passion, whether it's obtaining a college degree, learning a trade, those kinds of things, that's probably what success looks like. Because on the clinical side, we've got issues with brain damage from the drugs. Okay, I had a stroke in 2007, and I think I may have told you in the past, my closest friend for years was Doris Roberts, who played the mom on the TV show Everybody Loves Raymond. And I don't say that to sound pretentious. I mean, it was a fact. I was with her when I had my stroke, and she called her doctor and he said, I think you're having a stroke. And they got me into the medical center and I got that stroke medicine. But the first thing the neurosurgeon said is, what is your history of drug and alcohol abuse? Because they saw it on my brain. And so, with these young men, they're controlled by fear, they're controlled by drugs. And so, we do have some brain damage. We do have things that have been affected. And today, fentanyl is in everything. They want them addicted, okay? Unfortunately, relapse is a part of recovery. I know that it doesn't always have to be, but it's just the fact that it is. And so the question becomes, how do we help them after they relapse? Because the power of these, the powerfulness of these drugs, right, is so critical. And so I think it's too early. We've only been doing this 3 years to really understand what we think the recipe for success is. But what I can say is, when these young men come to us, they know how to lie, cheat, steal, fight, and manipulate. That's what they've been taught. That's how they survived. And there is real goodness in them. There's real kindness. Nobody's ever give them the chance to show it, right? Because everybody's taken from them. So our strategy is always to let them make their own independent decisions, and we know they're going to fall. And as Landon says, when they fall, we're going to be there to pick them up because they all make poor decisions. And so I think that from where I sit, that's right now the best thing we can do because some of these boys are going to need lifelong care. And Landon said earlier, you've got this neurodivergent crowd that we know the drugs have caused this schizophrenia and other issues, you know what I mean, that are happening on the brain development side. They'll never be able to take care of themselves. And so we've got to fix that and be able to have permanent housing for young men and young girls, by the way, that way. And then I think the other thing is that most people don't understand this is a very complex, expensive program to run. You know, when you have to have 24-hour care, you have to have bilingual staff. You know, the fact, and then of course, one of the things that we haven't even talked about other than the drugs and the sex trafficking is the torture. So, you know, we see with boys that they're tortured more, all right? That there's this sick underground world that wants to purchase these boys. And obviously, there's some sort of a sexual component there, but they're not having sex with them at that time, right? There's something sexual, but they want to purchase them just to hurt them. And so you've got that on top of everything else. The fact that they're told nobody loves them, nobody wants them. You know, if you don't do what we tell you, we're going to kill your mother, your father, your dog, your cat. They hook them on the drugs. I mean, this isn't easy to figure out. And so, and that's why we have to have clinical experts from really around the world. Right, they can help guide us, and we keep up on every new technique and what can we do to kind of get to the bottom of this. And we think and rethink and double think, right, our treatment programs and testing and everything that we do for these young men. And that's kind of it from a layman's terms. I'll have Landon put in a little bit more clinical term for you.
Yeah, Bob, with when you mentioned the torture, I is it an issue? Because, you know, I was sexually abused by men and women when I was being trafficked. And as I look back on it, women hurt me more and enjoyed hurting me. And I never received that kind of pain from men. And does that place another layer on top of all of the other complex mental things that, you know, I'm trying to get some therapy here from y'all tonight with what I deal with in life, because that torture part, I haven't opened that closet yet very much. That's one of those quiet things.
Tonight, go ahead. This will boggle everybody's mind.
Yeah, so it definitely adds a layer. No doubt about that. It gets into power and control differentials. So it's not just the power and control that, you know, most people are aware of when it comes to sexual abuse, where it's more about the power and the control than it is about the actual sexual experience. When it comes to torture, you're adding not only the another layer of power and control, but also some sadism, masochism type stuff, which gets into the fringes of even just abnormal human psychology. Even in that world, it's on the fringes. It's very much in the extreme. And as Bob mentioned, we consult with experts from all over the country and some even internationally. And I have you know, consulted on these cases with those individuals who are experts in this. And that's what they've told me is they're like, this is a, you know, a small percentage, but it's a very real percentage that has a much greater impact than, you know, a disproportionate impact, if you will. But what you get into with the torture piece is it's not just about learning how to, you know, have healthy relationships again and coping skills and navigating life skills and whatnot. It's the little things in life, like, and you know, everybody's very familiar with triggers around sound, you know, like shell shock, right? But this gets into somatic triggers, which somatic just means physiological. It's in the body. And so you can have something like, hey, I'm just tapping you on the shoulder, just saying hi, very simple, easy touch. And that's, whoa, too overwhelming. So, like, we have to tell all of our staff, any volunteers that we have trained, even sometimes experts in the field who are coming in to help us consult on something else, say, hey, you got to ask first. If you want to shake a hand, if you want to do a fist bump, anything, you got to ask first. And we tell the guys the same thing because there's something about that extra layer that disrupts the normal like proximity understanding that we have as humans around touch and around approaching another person. And it adds an extra layer of fear. It makes it where even the smallest kind of kindness from another human being is met with ample suspicion, fear, anxiety, and a natural internal response to either run or fight or freeze. We don't see as much of the social engagement attending to. There's a new F in that. There's the fight, flight, freeze that everyone's aware of, but there's also fawn, which is where somebody is actually trying to gain the favor of the person harming them. We don't really see that much with the guys. And I don't know if it's because of the torture, or if it's because of, the stigmas and just the male-female differences. But what I can say is we don't see a whole lot of that side of it. We see the other three a lot. And typically it tends to fall into the fight or the run, the flee versions. Those are the two that we see the most of. And it's an understandable reaction to such horrors as not only being bought for sex, labor, and drugs, but also just to be tortured.
You
Tell
know,
me, go ahead, Bob.
I gotta tell you too, that's a real trigger for me and a pet peeve to this day. When somebody comes up behind you and tries to scare you, all right, or they go boo, right? I mean, I gotta tell you, I just go through the roof, and everybody thinks it's funny, but it's not funny to me with what I've been through. You know what I mean? And so, they're simple things. And so one of the things that I think we've gotten very good at is asking the boys, can I shake your hand? You know what I mean? Would you like to talk about it? How do you feel? Right? Those types of things. Because that's how when we get our best information from them. But of course, they have to be ready. And in order for them to be ready, they got to feel safe, right?
I have to be honest, I think that the safest that I've ever felt was when COVID was here and we had to have that social distancing and only so many people allowed on an elevator and so many people couldn't get within 6, 10 feet of you. I love that. That was absolutely heaven to me because it's like I feel safe. But
I
yeah.
agree.
I will do that now over at Texas Children, get on the elevator. And when the elevator opens and there's already four people in there, it's like, I'll take the next one. No, you go ahead. That's above my count.
And I've
Oh,
always done that, by the way, even before COVID.
yeah.
Yeah,
How
agree
about
with you.
boundaries, guardrails that we put around us going through the recovery? How important are those boundaries? Because, when they're especially recovering from drug abuse or alcohol, I've always heard that if you walk in front of a barber shop so many times a day, eventually you're going to stop and get a haircut. We got to put boundaries around our life to be able to help us control what sometimes we can't control in life. How essential is that in the recovery process too?
I'm going to defer to Landon, and I'm going to tell you why. I think that as an organization, we have a staff that is probably the best in the country, or one of the best in the country, at holding boundaries. And that's come from quite a learning experience, right? With prior staff and other things, and implementing the correct program. So, Landon, go ahead and explain boundaries, because I think as an organization, we've become very good at it.
I agree. And it's absolutely essential, Greg. It is the most important thing in the work that we do, especially with what these individuals have been through. Boundaries is the most important thing. First, they don't understand boundaries. They don't understand healthy boundaries, unhealthy boundaries, what a boundary is, what that means. That is the furthest thing from their mind when they first come in. And so there's a lot of things, especially at first, that they kind of buck the system a little bit because they don't understand why is there a guardrail here? That doesn't make sense. And just to give you a good example, one of the things that I had to really break down for one of the guys is he was getting very worked up about how long something was taking, and that thing was getting into school. And he just could not wrap his head around why this was just the normal way things are. And so what I had to break down for him is, in the world of trafficking or drug trafficking, labor, sex, you name it, there's, for lack of a better term, instant gratification. Things happen quickly, and they have to happen quickly for a variety of reasons. But in the norm, in a healthy world, in a normal world, there are boundaries in place to prevent bad things from happening or the wrong people from gaining access to something or to someone, right? And those boundaries that are in place, even though sometimes the red tape can be really annoying, it's to keep bad things, worse things like fraud, right? Abuse, et cetera, from happening. And so those boundaries are actually quite good. So another way that I describe it to them is boundaries aren't about putting walls up. Boundaries are about showing people where the doors are. It's how do you enter and how do you enter in a healthy way. And the other thing I really want to add to that is something from something I said earlier. A lot of individuals in the world, and not just the guys we work with, but a lot of people in the world, they've never really experienced healthy, safe love. And love with healthy boundaries is something that Bob and I preach all the time, both to the guys, the staff, the vendors, the volunteers, on a podcast, at a lecture. I mean, it's about being able to show somebody love, but not crossing that boundary into this is a personal relationship or this is an inappropriate relationship. You can care about somebody. It's the Greek love, like agape, right? It's like I can care about somebody. I can really be invested in somebody and want the best for somebody without being a friend, a boyfriend, a girlfriend in a relationship. You know what I mean? You can have it be professional, but still very much caring and wanting the best for that individual. And so that becomes a matter of explaining where those lines are, And a good example of that is our former clinical director. She would say to the guys, "I do not take calls after 9 p.m." And the reason for that is because they will call at 2 a.m., at midnight, just to talk. And I get it, and I get them wanting to reach out and the importance of that, but we have to teach them that's not the appropriate way to get that need met and show them another better way.
That's good. That's good. T. Well, we only have a minute or so. Thank you. I could have you on every week for the next 5 weeks, and not even get
Oh,
through the
we'll
Bible
do
for
it.
you. I'd love to. Bob, what's happening at the state capitol this coming week, Landon or Bob? This sounds exciting.
Yeah,
Tell me all about it before we go tonight.
we're working with the Texas Trucking Association. We're
Okay.
doing a press conference Wednesday morning at 9 a.m. And for anybody in Austin, we would love to have them join us on the South Capitol steps. We'll have several senators there and state reps. But we're putting stickers, "The Boys Are Sex Trafficked Too," on semi trucks. Never been done before anywhere in the country, Texas. And so we'll have an example of a semi truck there, along with the press and several speakers and so on and so forth.
And what time
Excuse
is
me.
that happening this week?
Wednesday at
9
9 a.m.
o'clock Wednesday morning.
Yep. Wednesday morning, 9 o'clock on the steps of the Capitol in Austin.
Right. And the
Cool.
semi will be parked in front of the Capitol, right, with the sticker on it for the media. And we would love to have people. If you're in Austin, show up and support us.
And the goal of this is for every semi in the United States to have this sticker on the back of its bumper.
You got it, sir. Yes, we're hoping that other states will follow and other trucking companies.
Fantastic. Fantastic. I tell you what, guys, I can't thank you enough for being with us tonight. I thoroughly enjoy just the way y'all share and talk and just who you are. Thank you for being authentic, genuine, and for the work that you do. And if there's ever anything that you need from me, you holler and I'll come running and help you out any way. And I would love to have you guys back on. Love to.
Well, we'd love to, and we need to get you up for a tour and meet
Oh,
some of the
I
young
want to do
men.
that.
That's what I was going
Absolutely.
to say. It's an honor, sir, and I
We'll
mean
see. We'll
that.
do it.
Thank
Thank
you
you
so
so
much.
much. Appreciate it. Like we
Thank
do
you.
each and every week. Bob, I believe, talked about, Bob or Landon, I can't remember, talked about fear. Sometimes fear enters in, but I'm going to let you know there's one emotion that's stronger than that almighty fear, and it's hope. Hope overcomes fear, trumps it every time. Never give up on hope. No matter what you're going through, no matter what you're going to face tomorrow, no matter what you're dealing with right now, there's always hope. If you need something, 832-396-6525 is my personal cell phone. Text me, email me, let me know what's on your mind and you want to talk, and we'll be there for you. Thank you, Bob and Landon, for being with us tonight. God bless you all. And join us next week for another edition live from Houston, Texas, of Breaking the Silence. God bless. Have an awesome week.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.